Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Started the show with some technical difficulties, but we started with Here Comes the Boom. The Boom, Legion of Boom's Seattle's defense is what won the Super Bowl with Kerry the Weight this week. We're going to talk all things Super Bowl today. Seattle and their dominance. Does this hurt Peyton Manning's legacy? We have so many questions we can get to with the Super Bowl. We also going to have a guest later on the show, Mr. Terrell Brown from the San Francisco 49ers. So sorry about the 3 or 4 minutes of technical difficulties, but we're ready to go. Mr. Miller, you got anything you want to start with?
Hey, good to be back post-Super Bowl. No hangover. Excited to talk to Terrell Brown. That's all I got. Let's get this first commercial off the ground, and then we'll come back and dive right into things.
And I hate to say it, but when you're right, you're right, and we're right. So we'll be back. We're going to play a couple commercials. We'll be back on All Things Sports, so give us a few minutes.
Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something, and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text. Oh, there's another one. Wow. Busy, busy me. So, anyway...
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. My friends keep commenting on my comment. Oh, there's another one. So many comments on my comment.
Oh, I can't wait to watch TV tonight. Playoffs!
Hey, guys, check out my new video game. Pew, pew!
Wait. Mom, what?
Huh? What? Hold
What'd
on.
What'd you say?
Wait a second, hold on.
This weekend, unplug. Take your family to the forest. There's nothing in the world like experiencing nature firsthand. Trees, paths, bluebirds, streams. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car. Which, if you're buzzed...
6-8-10-9-10-4.
Could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number 1 on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're doing All Things Seattle. We started with a little Here Comes the Boom and that little Pearl Jam for you. Talk about the dominant beatdown in the Super Bowl. I did not expect a beatdown. I called it 24-20, but it was definitely a beatdown. So tell us why we were right, Mr. Miller. Everybody who was on Broncos, or at least all the people we know was on Broncos, we're one of the two on the call on Seahawks. Tell everybody why we were right and what you saw.
Well, I think anybody that listened to the show last week will know that, you know, first things first, we started with Peyton, and I thought his timing would be off, and it was. He ran up against a defense that he hadn't played before, and I think that was a big part of it. I think the Seattle defense was something that the Denver Broncos this year hadn't seen. I don't think they'd, you know, the offensive line didn't play well. The receivers really not that they didn't play well, but I don't think that they came up against something like that where I don't know that they were ready to take the hits. And you seen that just Seattle was the more aggressive, the team that knew where they were going all the time. And, you know, it started out, one bad snap put Peyton behind the eight ball, and from there he could, you know, he's just not, just like we talked last week, he's just not the guy that's going to lead you from behind. And I felt going into the game, I mentioned to people, I said I think Seattle was going to get them by 10-14. I just thought if he fell behind, it was gonna spell bad news, and sure enough it did. And I'm with you, there was no way that I could have predicted Peyton would put up no points in the first half. I don't think that had happened since 2008. That was somewhere, you know, as I watched the game, I was really taken aback at really how dominated the Broncos were, and I think it was evident from the first snap.
Yeah, actually, it was evident from the first snap, and I kind of was not really surprised, I should say. I guess I wasn't surprised by it, but I think Seattle and teams like San Francisco kind of have the new way to play defense. I think the new way to play defense in the league is try to rush the passer with four and then, you know, not let anything get behind you, and when receivers catch the ball, you just got to beat them up. You got with the rules, you got to hit them within the rules. And what I saw was by the third quarter, Wes Welker didn't want to catch the ball anymore, and Eric Decker didn't want to catch the ball anymore. Demaryius was still trying to ball, but for the most part, I think those receivers gave up. I think they quit on Peyton Manning because they were just every time a receiver caught the ball, four or five guys hitting them hard. Cam Chancellor was hitting them hard. The linebackers were flying to the ball. As I was watching it with the group of people I was watching it with, we were all just kind of amazed at the physicality of the Seahawks from start to finish. And even on offense, they didn't really run the ball well, but you know, Russell Wilson never got touched. Their line was better than their – the Seattle Seahawks D-line was way better than the Denver Broncos D-line, and it was just a physical beatdown. There's no other way to put it. It was a beatdown from start to finish.
And I think it gets lost a little bit. I think Denver's defense, I think they did a lot of the things that they needed to do in the first half. They held Seattle to three twice after turnovers. And, you know, really they stopped Marshawn Lynch. He was never able to get going. Russell Wilson played great on third down. That was another thing that I took away from the game. I heard some people say, well, Russell Wilson didn't even play that great. I beg to differ. He played. He made every throw he needed to make. I was very impressed with what he did. He looked prepared. And really on third down, he came through numerous times. So I was impressed there. Another thing I took away was I was interested to ask you was the coaching decision by John Fox, where they could have took 3 points at the end of the first half. And you know, as I was watching, I asked, you know, some of the people, I said, what do you do here? It was third down. And I think they got a penalty, and then they ended up getting within about 1 yard or so of the first down. And I had asked prior, I said, what do you do here? And everybody said, kick it, you know, just novices like. And then they got a little bit closer after the penalty and then the play, and I said, well, what do you do now? Do you still – and everybody still said, kick it. You got to take that momentum into the half. And so I was real disappointed in Fox there, because I think that was the play. And it's easy to say and second guess, but everybody that I asked even said do it, and that was my thought as well, was kick that ball. And, you know, not that I could have predicted Harvin was going to come out like that, which was another bad coaching decision. You got one of the best legs in the league, and you try to and short kick the ball when you should probably be trying to power that through the end zone. So I think even John Fox, I think it goes, you know, you can. There's plenty of blame to go around for Denver. I think from the coaching all the way down, didn't play really well. Like I said, I thought if anybody played well, I think the defense hung in a little bit. You know, I think they were outmanned in the to begin with, which, you know, we went through that ad nauseum last week. But you know, I think there's a lot of blame to go around, and I don't want to let Peyton off the hook easy. But I think I don't think his coaching staff or his guys helped him much. So, but I do want to get into Peyton, and you know, he received so much love over the past 2 weeks, and you know, from people on ESPN to people I know, to novices and women, and not to badmouth women, I'm just saying everybody wanted to tell me how great Peyton Manning was over the last 2 weeks, and I don't think he should be able to skate with as bad as his team played. I can't give him all the blame, but I want to ask you, Mike, what kind of grade do you give Peyton? And along with that, will he get back in this position? And what do you see? I know legacy's been thrown around a lot. What do you see his legacy? Does it take a hit? And where do you have him on your greatest of all time list?
If this is his last time in a Super Bowl, then yeah, his legacy definitely takes a hit. If he gets back next year and plays well, I wouldn't even say plays well. He's got to win. If he gets
as you look at the AFC, I mean, do you see him getting back, or do you think this is it? Do you think he's been exposed?
Yeah, the AFC. If he's in the NFC, I would say, you know, no. But the AFC, I mean, who's good? The Patriots. You know, Kansas City might get better. San Diego might get better. Baltimore might get better. But for the most part, the Patriots, that division was built. I mean, that conference was building up for Patriots, Broncos, pretty much from the start. I don't see it being any different next year. You know, we still got to go through the draft and free agency. But I don't see it being any different next year. And I think that he's got a real good shot to get back. I think his problem is going to be is that, as we saw, the second best team, I would say the Broncos might still be the third or fourth best team in the NFL, even though they might be the first or second best team in the AFC. So I can see him getting back to the Super Bowl. I can't see him winning. But I will say this, because I'm not a Peyton hater. I got caught that the other day. I'm not necessarily a Peyton hater. I do think he's good for the game. But I told you this last week, he's an overthinker. I think that anytime you get in big games and, you know, you're checking out of plays, you're checking back into plays, as you can see, Seattle just ran their base defense most of the game. And, you know, that's, hey, this is what got us here. This is what we do. I shouldn't say dumb it down, but for the most part, there was a point in the game where, you know, I just think they were outcoached. I think they were outcoached. I think, for me, they leave the game plan too much in Peyton's hands. If I'm the head coach, maybe I take some of those reins from him, and I think people say that's blasphemous when you talk about taking away some of the reins from Peyton, but maybe he's got too much power in that offense. And I think when it was time to maybe, you know, change some things, maybe they should have ran the ball a little bit more. Maybe they should have tried to keep Seattle's defense on the field a little bit more, because the crossing routes, they had just decided they were going to blow up the crossing route. So, I think Peyton's legacy takes a hit. If he wasn't ahead of Tom Brady anyway, but if he was on your list, he's got to go lower than Tom Brady. I think he's got to even go lower than some other guys that we had talked about in the past. So even though I wasn't a Peyton fan going in, I think this definitely hurt his legacy.
Yeah, definitely. I think Seattle laid a blueprint of how to beat him, and not that every team has the dogs to do that, but I think had San Francisco played Denver, I think it would have looked a lot the same. At least on that side of the ball, I think San Francisco would have gave Peyton fits as well. Pressure, you can look back through his career, young, old. He's always had trouble with pressure in his face. You get to him early, and he starts, you know, the happy feet start up, and he struggles from there. So, yeah, I think he would have struggled with either Seattle or San Fran, a defense that could bring what those two teams bring. I guess going ahead, who do you like in the Super Bowl next year? As far as would you say? I mean, give me a percentage on the Seattle repeat, or who do you see making a move next year?
It's so hard to repeat, even though you got the youngest. You know, they do, you know, I've heard all the they have the youngest team, age wise. You know, but so did the 85 Bears, and that team never got back. So I think repeating is hard, and you know. I think San Fran, they will keep their dogs together and be ready for a run. So I think if I have to give a percentage, I would say maybe, it's high. I'll say maybe a 35% chance they get back. Because I think, you know, Green Bay is always doing things to get better. And you know, Aaron Rodgers, you're going to win four or five games just because he's your quarterback. The NFC's too tough, man. It's too tough. I'm not, you know, I've heard a lot, you know, about the Cardinals being good. I'm not as sold on them as other people, but I think the Rams are going to be better. I think that, you know, if done right, I even think we talked about Detroit a couple weeks ago. I think they got a chance to be better. I even think Chicago has a chance to be better. So I think the NFC is going to be tough, but I give them a 35% chance to get back. What about you?
You know what? That's a good number. I would probably even go – I kind of just echo what you just said. I would even probably go a little bit lower, maybe a 25%, which is still giving them a 1-4 shot. It's just so hard to do 2 years in a row. You got to go injuries. There's going to be some guys – I don't know. I haven't really seen their free agent list, but as every Super Bowl team does, there's going to be some guys cash in off the – you know, everybody wants a Super Bowl champion on their team. So I see a few guys cashing in. I mean, you've seen what, you know, Baltimore took a huge hit because almost everybody left and they had a few guys retiring, some different things. So, yeah, it's so difficult. I love their team. Their team, you know, fun to watch. You know, they made for a boring Super Bowl as far as they blew those guys out so bad, but just a fun team to watch on defense, people flying around and hitting like they do. Cam Chancellor. I wish he was on my team. He can cover. He can hit like a linebacker. He kind of does it everything. It makes you wonder how he fell to the fifth round in the draft. But even he had a second and third round grade and still fell to the fifth round. So, you know, not to be too much on him, but yeah, just super impressive. So we'll see. You know, now the journey begins to next year. We kind of move into the draft and different things like that, and, you know, NFL 2013-14 kind of comes to a close. What do you think about – I just want to get your opinion real quick on the Super Bowl itself. What do you think as far as New York, what type of job that they did, and what are the chances of it returning to a cold-weather city?
Well, actually, I heard earlier today that there's a very good chance that it's going to return to a cold-weather city. I mean, they got lucky. Snow came the very next day. I mean – they eventually won't be so lucky if they continue going to cold weather cities. But I think if you go to a cold weather city, I think you have to consider the venue. It has to be a venue like New York, like Chicago, where, you know, if the weather is cold, there's still a lot of things for people to do and places for people to go and enjoy themselves. You know, like, for example, here, we're based out of Phoenix. The weather is the attraction. So if you don't have the weather, you have to have other attractions available. That's why I don't think, even though Minnesota's getting a new stadium, I'm not sure if Minnesota's the best place to hold the Super Bowl. I think you got to keep it. If you're going to go to cold weather, I think you got to keep it in major cities and go with that. I don't think that it can survive or or I shouldn't say survive. Super Bowl is going to survive no matter what. But I don't think it can thrive in a cold weather city where they don't have enough attractions or enough things for people to do. Let me ask you this. So, you know, we've been talking all year on this show about how you can't play defense, how you can't play defense, so and how you build a team. Would you say Seattle's the blueprint then? In San Francisco, I'll throw them in that mix too because they're kind of built the same way. Is that the blueprint, not needing so much out of your quarterback, maybe having a young quarterback who hasn't made any money yet, who can run the offense and kind of not screw things up, and just putting all, you know, your draft picks, your lower draft picks, and developing your defensive players and having a solid running game, which has been the blueprint probably, you know, forever, but with the new rules, is that still the blueprint?
Well, I think a few of the things you just mentioned are kind of hitting the nail right on the head, but I think it's a little easier said than done. First and foremost, I think once you pay a quarterback like Peyton Manning or you pay a Drew Brees, some of those guys, once you give them that big check, it's hard to fill in all the gaps because you just don't have the money. I mean, you know, if I'm playing in the NFL, I'm taking a little bit of extra cash. If I'm a second tier guy, so I'm gonna go where they're gonna give me the most money. So I think it starts with that. I think it's hard to win it with one of those guys just because of the way the salary cap is structured. But I think it's easier said than done because Seattle did a great job with some of the draft picks they have. I mean, like I mentioned Chancellor already. You know, they hit big with Earl Thomas in that same draft.
Sure.
You had this guy that replaced Browner, Byron Marshall. He was a guy, he didn't start a lot in college. He played for a Clemson team where Seattle scouting department is good. I know we've seen Pittsburgh win some championships in the past, Green Bay recently. I think those guys, those organizations have some of the best scouting departments and GMs in place that really know what they're doing. So I think that's part of it as well. And I think that allows those guys to get signed maybe for that second contract if you don't have that big quarterback number on the team. So, yeah, I think it's a blueprint. You got to run the ball and play defense in the NFL, especially when the weather turns. Sometimes you can get away with that in September and October. Maybe not so much when the games get shortened in the playoffs and possessions mean so much. You can't afford turnovers and things like that. Where running it and completing the ball on third down, those things are huge. And you know, Seattle's going to be in the same boat because they're going to have to pay Russell Wilson. I think he gets paid sooner than later. I see him signing a deal next season before the season's over. So, you know, they're gonna be in the same boat soon. They need to pay him. He's legit. I think he earned his money. He brought a Super Bowl to Seattle, which has never been done. So I think they got to go ahead and pay him. That's just how the league works, and they'll have to figure out how to put some of those players in positions without paying them so much. So to answer your question, the blueprint is exactly how you said it, and you know, we'll see. You got an upcoming Philadelphia team next year. You know, I'm trying to think of some of these teams that don't have high paid quarterbacks, but yeah, I think that's definitely the way to do it. So congrats to the Seahawks. I don't know if you want to get anything else in. I know we're going to be talking to Terrell Brown here soon and kind of get his thoughts on some different things, but I don't know if you want to say anything else NFL, or I think I'm ready to kind of cap the 2013-14 season and get into some other things.
Well, I'll say one more thing about MVP Malcolm Smith, and this is no knock on him, but like, you remember Dexter Jackson and Larry Brown, how they parlayed, like, you know, they were no names, they parlayed their Super Bowl MVP and the big money. If Malcolm Smith was a free agent, somebody would overpay him this year.
Absolutely, and he should cash in, and somebody should overpay him. That's how it works, and that's how it's going to continue to work.
That is how it works. So.
He balled. What do you want him? He balled in the playoffs. What do you want him to? What do you want him to do? He had a good game against San Fran too. So,
well, I mean,
another one more recently is the linebacker for Miami that cashed in last year.
Ellaby.
Yeah, that's
I guess my point is none of those players were as good as they were in those games ever again. Ellaby, you know, the jury's still out on him, but
right. Paul Kruger in Cleveland. I mean, it happens. I mean, we could; those guys are MVP, so I hear what you're saying. But it happens every year. I mean, people want Super Bowl champions on their team. I think a lot of GMs believe that's going to bring winning. And hey,
a lot of has it ever brought winning though?
Well, I'm sure somebody's went somewhere and won the next year, but
name me one. Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Because I just don't think it happens a lot. So I think that a lot of times these guys have big playoffs, big, you know, and big trade. They get paid. And I'm not saying they shouldn't get paid. I'm for everybody getting paid. I'm just saying that, you know, a lot of times teams miss on these guys because they see them play well in the biggest game of their life. They pay them big, and then, you know, they're never as good again. And I'm not one of those believers that, you know, just because you're a Super Bowl winner, you're going to bring a certain mentality to my team. You know, but that's just my opinion. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, we can put a cap on the 2013-2014 season. Congratulations, Seahawks. There's a lot I could say about, you know, I'll probably do my last rant on Peyton Manning, but for the most part, congratulations, Seahawks. To all you Bronco nerds that were getting on my nerves all week, enjoy the off season and see if you can get back. All right. Hopefully, we haven't had him call in yet, but hopefully after the break we'll have Terrell Brown for you. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Oh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at 58 years old. 8 years into the disease was when all the light went out.
For me, it was heart-wrenching.
Looking into the eyes of somebody with Alzheimer's sometimes, you just don't see the person's soul is like gone.
And it takes a toll on everyone. I mean, it's a depressing disease to watch unfold before your eyes.
She actually thought those of us who were caring for her and who loved her most were her worst enemies.
More and more responsibilities fell on my shoulders.
This disease just ravages a family.
It changes your life.
The magnitude of it is indescribable. My mother taught me to be in the moment.
We have to live in the moment with them.
And I'm going to be with that person right now in this moment, wherever she is.
Now is the moment. If we work together, we can stop this epidemic.
Contact Bright Focus and learn more.
Bruno Mars, ladies and gentlemen. Did you get to watch that halftime show, Chris?
I did. I thought Bruno killed it. What'd you think?
I thought Bruno killed it. I was surprised then. I'm not a big Bruno dude, but I thought he killed it, and I thought the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on point, too, although I heard that they weren't actually playing the instruments. But
right, and I mean, for a big production like that, I'm not even hating on that. That's how it has to be. So
yeah, that is how it has to be.
Don't hate on my Chili Peppers.
We got a call on hold. Let me see who we're talking to. Is this Terrell Brown?
Yeah.
Caller?
Yeah.
Hello?
My dad.
Hello?
All right. Seems that we got someone who got a hold of their dad's phone. So, hopefully they'll call back and In the meantime, probably some of the bigger news this week was Commissioner David Stern retired, 30 years as NBA commissioner. Moved the league from a place where it was, lots of people can say, a lot of people are old enough to remember what the league was like. I do, but like what the league was like before Commissioner Stern. So he moved the league from a place where it was not so great to, where basically, hold on a second, we got that caller back. Let's see. Hello, caller.
Hello.
All right. We're not going to fool with that. But anyway, as I was saying, most people credit Commissioner Stern with the movement of the league before they would market teams. He was the first person to decide to market individuals. And then after that, the league blew up, with the Jordan campaign and now the LeBron campaign and the Bird Magic Converse campaign, some of the best shoe campaigns. And once they started marketing individuals instead of teams, the league took off, and now the NBA is a money-making entity that you see before you. What do you have to say about Commissioner Stern and his time? I know you're a little bit younger than me. Maybe you don't remember most of it, but what do you think of it?
Well, first, let me put it out there. Let me say a ton of respect for David Stern. He's turned that league, in, like you said, into a conglomerate, and it was really struggling when he came on. So much credit to Stern there, but you can't name me a commissioner in your lifetime who hasn't been surrounded by more controversy either. The NBA, for whatever reason, is just it's had its share of fixing problems, and you had the betting referee, and he's had a few things, the whole lottery issue, and a few things, and I think the lottery was a good solution for a long time, but even teams have made accusations as far as maybe the fix being in and him trying to slot players where he wants them to go. And I guess, long story short, I guess David Stern is just – he's going to be known as a great businessman, because even if he is slotting players to go to certain places, that's probably good business and in the best interest of the NBA. So, I got to give him a lot of respect. I think he leaves a legacy. I like the way he went out quietly, not a lot of fanfare, for whatever his timing was for. I know he went out to the date of when he came in, but with Super Bowl weekend going on and things like that, I think he went out classy, and I think he'll still have quite a lot of power. As I think the young commissioner they're bringing in, Adam Silver, I think he'll definitely still use Stern for many things. So I don't know. I think as far as Stern's concerned, I think now, I guess what I'm trying to say is, now the NBA, I think not as in a good a spot as the NFL, but I think it'll be kind of hard to, he's kind of set him on a path where it's going to be hard for that to get messed up as far as now the NBA is kind of part of our culture. So, thumbs up to David Stern. I really, like you said, I don't really have a lot of inside knowledge on what he did to necessarily change the game, but. I don't know. That's all I got.
I think actually with David Stern, I was always kind of put off by how defensive he was whenever someone asked him a fair question about his league. If you ever watched David Stern in an interview and someone asked about Tim Donaghy, fair question. He is defensive. He is antagonistic. And I guess if you're the commissioner of a league, that's your baby, so anybody would protect their baby. But, fair questions. A lot of times, I think sometimes the way he was, he would put down fines. I think some of his, I thought he was out of line, like he would, overfine guys. I thought a lot of people were down on him about the dress code. I wasn't so much. I kind of understand the idea of, if you're sitting on the bench, there should be a certain dress code, et cetera, et cetera. However, I would say for the most part, he's pretty, I mean, from what I see amongst players, he always seemed to be pretty unpopular. However, I thought he was really good at keeping the league going, keeping the league viable. You know, those years, you know, you can say what you want, those years after, you know, the NBA is built in a way, unlike football, their salary cap is still built for larger market teams to prosper. So that being said, David Stern still wants, like, if you ask David Stern privately, he hates that San Antonio's probably built a dynasty. He wants L.A. to be, he wants L.A. to be viable. He wants Chicago to be viable. He wants New York to be viable. So if he's a, if you're a small market guy, if you're a small market team, if you're a small market owner, if you think David Stern's your friend, he's not. However, how you said about the lottery, I'm in agreement. I think the lottery is past its time. It looks fixed a lot of the time. You know, Chicago wasn't the worst team the year of the Derrick Rose draft. You know, I'm a Chicago fan, but the best player in the draft is a kid from Chicago, and Chicago wins the lottery. It just doesn't look right.
LeBron's from Cleveland. He goes to Cleveland.
Exactly. It just
Tim
doesn't
Duncan
look right.
San Antonio, questionable.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. That year, Boston tanked half their season to get Tim Duncan and then didn't get Tim Duncan. It just doesn't look right. So it's probably time to do away with that. And, you know.
Do you think that was a good solution at the time? I mean, what's the answer with the draft lottery? Because now if you take it away, though, then you have teams like that Boston team that are just going to pull the plug and try to get the top player. And we see, like, a draft this year where there's a lot at the top. If you can finish bottom three, you're guaranteeing yourself one of those where, as if there's a lottery, you're not guaranteeing yourself. So, and I agree. I don't know. I think that I agree because I think the lottery allows itself to be called, you know, fixed. So what is the solution there?
Good question. You're right. Once it's in place, it's kind of hard to take it away. So I don't know what the solution is. I mean, they've tweaked it to where, you know, the teams that have the worst records have a better chance of winning the lottery. But as we've seen, that still hasn't really translated into those teams winning the lottery. So I think maybe, and you're right, like if the Suns, you know, the Suns have played well and they're actually the sixth seed right now, but like, who knows what the Suns would have done if they would have been guaranteed, if they had guaranteed a top three pick if they had tanked. And I think that, you know, you see a lot of these teams, the whole Eastern, I would say 80% of the Eastern Conference is probably tanking right now. So I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what the answer is. I'm not a real big NBA dude to begin with. I kind of jumped off the boat. I'm one of those, call me what you want, who jumped off the boat when Jordan retired, but I will say this, the league's still making money, and it'll continue to make money. People still go to games. I think the NBA is still number two after the NFL. Obviously, they're still, regardless of the fact that I don't watch them, they're obviously doing something right.
Well, let me ask you, let's kind of get into a little NBA before we let that go. Once again, he's been my guy. He hasn't been my guy. Now he's my guy. Jason Kidd coaching him up a little bit in the East. You got Miami.
He's your guy again?
Yeah, he's my guy again, man. He's coaching him up.
All right.
You got Miami they're not playing well right now, but do you think Miami's playing possum a little bit, or do you think there's some holes in that team and this is the year where they fall, or do you see three-peat? We've had the KD scoring run we haven't been able to talk about. He's scoring like no one scored since Jordan. Maybe give you a reason to get back into the NBA. And I don't know. I see a Western Conference that's not as strong as in years past. Where I really, you know, I've really held out hope that Oklahoma. I thought Oklahoma had a great shot 2 years ago, and I thought San Antonio. I mean, that was a great series. They gave them a run. You know, what's your prognosis for how this finishes coming up? We got All-Star break coming up, and you know, Indiana made a deal for Bynum recently, which seemed like a little kind of a block for him to go to Miami, because if you can run Bynum for 20 minutes and run Oden for 20 minutes, that really gave him a presence in the middle. So I don't know. Miami is playing bad. I don't know how close you've been watching.
Yeah, I've been watching a little bit.
Losing to some bad teams. What do you think is going on there?
I don't think anything's going on there. I think that they're resting Dwayne Wade as much as they can for the playoffs. He put up 30. Was it last night or two nights ago? He put up 30. I think as long as he's healthy, his knees are fine. You keep him rested. And this is why I don't like the NBA.
Right, the Heat are going to win.
Heat are going to win, yeah. Like, basketball is structured to where if you have, you saw it with Kobe and Shaq, you saw it with Michael and Scottie, you see it with LeBron and D-Wade. If you have two of the top five players in the league, you put some shooters around them, you're going to win. All you need, if you can manage to get two of the top five players to come to your team, you get a guy who's going to scrap and rebound and a guy who's going to knock down shots, you're a championship contender. That's what Shaq and Kobe was. That's what LeBron and Wade is. That's what Michael and Scottie was. That's what Magic and Kareem was. I mean, that's just the way basketball is built. So, for the most part, I don't see anybody beating Miami. I do think Indiana has a chance, and I think they were smart to sign Bynum. Just if Bynum doesn't play a minute for them and he keeps them off of Miami, it was worth it. So they got a shot. I'm kind of hoping Indiana does beat them because I just like the way they were built. That's the only team I can think of in a long time that's been – well, I guess San Antonio would fall in this category, but I like the fact that they built through the draft and most of their players are homegrown talents.
Can we say that Indiana is trying to Detroit Pistons, Miami, Chicago Bulls? Because the only way that Indiana can beat them is through defense.
Through defense and physical play, I think they're gonna. I think one of the reasons they got Bynum along with Hibbert is, come playoff time, they're gonna use their fouls. They're gonna be physical. And to counter that, I think Miami's going to go small. They're going to try to run. And a lot of times that doesn't factor into playoff basketball. So, like I said, I think Miami, it just really depends on health. I honestly do. I don't think anybody could beat them, in a seven-game series. If it was, March Madness and it was one and done, I would say so. But in a seven-game series, the best teams win, especially in basketball. And I can't see anybody beating Miami 4 out of 7 times, even when Westbrook comes back. Clippers, you give me a team, I can show you cracks where Miami's just better than they are.
Well, while I hear what you're saying, I'm not ready to drink the Heat Kool-Aid quite that quick because I think, as we've watched over the past two seasons, I think Miami's been lucky to win the two championships that they've won also. There are some holes in that team, and they continue to be there. If Wade and LeBron, which it's hard to do, but if they both have an off night on the same night, there's just not enough scoring on that team to get them through. So I don't know. We'll see. I think there's only two teams in the league that can beat them, and Westbrook's got to get healthy, and I think they can beat them in a 7-game series. And I think, as you just mentioned, I think Indiana's tough. I'm a little back and forth on that. They really. I don't know. For me, I see what you're saying with the fouls and being able to get physical and just having another body inside. But I don't know if a Bynum signing actually makes them better. I think that may make them worse because now you take a Granger or a Stevenson, somebody that has to come off the court to have him in. I know he can spell Hibbert a little bit as well, but he's lazy. I just think he makes them worse. I don't know. He's a cancer kind of.
I'll say this. I wouldn't sign Bynum. Bynum is just that guy who he plays basketball because he's 7 foot tall. Like, he doesn't dig basketball, I think. Like, he doesn't – whatever work it takes to be an NBA player, he doesn't want to put in – and for a team like Indiana that's kind of built on hard work, defense, commitment, et cetera, I think he can only make it worse. I think it's a bad signing, like I said, and I think I agree with you. The only reason I see for it is to – keep him away from the Heat or keep him away from another, no other team. Yeah, keep him away from the Heat.
What percentage do you give Bynum being on that roster going into round one of the playoffs?
I think I'll say 50%. I think he'll be on the roster, but I think he'll be inactive. I think he'll I haven't seen it. I mean, I think he played a few games for Cleveland this year, but for the most part, the only Andrew Bynum I've seen in the last two or three years has been with a wild afro and a T-shirt. I haven't seen him playing any basketball or any meaningful basketball.
Yeah, anytime you see him, he's got a bad haircut. What about who you got for the MVP this year? Early pre-All-Star MVP.
KD.
He's ahead of LeBron.
And, you know, let's be honest about this. It's kind of the same. It was kind of the same when, you know, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird went back and forth with the MVPs and, you know, with Michael. There's certain players. LeBron's that player. You can really give LeBron – you can find a reason to give LeBron the MVP every year if you wanted to. I think this happens to be the year right now, especially with the fact that Westbrook has been out and that team is still pretty good. I think you got to give it to KD.
Well, you got to give it to KD today. I agree. I'm not going to argue with you on that. But I think LeBron, I think he wants to. He's got to get Jordan somewhere. Maybe get more MVPs. He's already kind of on pace to do so. So I think he'll close. I mean, if we see the Heat go on a post All Star game run where they win 13, 14 straight, you know, which we've seen them do in the past, I think that talk will change, and you know they'll kind of be neck and neck. So, I think you're right. I think KD's in the lead. I think he could. You know, Westbrook's going to come back and gobble up a bunch of his shots. And so we'll see. We'll see where their numbers finish off. I think LeBron's going to make a strong run at that, to be honest with you.
One thing we haven't talked about that I kind of want to touch on real quick was the Rockets. Did Dwight Howard make any difference on that team or enough of a difference to where they are championship viable?
Who is the starting point guard for the Rockets?
I don't know.
I think that's the problem. I think he does make them better. I'm not gonna start a Dwight Howard hate session, but are they championship caliber this year? Not even close. I think they need a good guard to come in there. I'm sure they still wish. I don't know how they let Kyle Lowry get away. I'm sure they still wish they had him. But yeah, they need a good guard in there. You need somebody to. I know they have Harden bring the ball up a lot. You know, it's something he did in Oklahoma too, but. You got to put a top guard in there, and you know, which it's hard to do. I mean, that's more money because you already got a lot of money committed to those two. How do you bring in a Deron Williams or an established guard already? But at the very least, they got to bring in somebody who we know their name, because I don't know the starting point guard for the Heat. Jeremy Lin comes off the bench. I know
yeah,
they
have
him
off
there.
The bench. I don't know who the starter is.
Yeah, I don't know who the starter is, and Jeremy Lin's not going to – I mean, Jeremy Lin's a good guy to come off the bench and fill second quarter minutes, but – you got to give me a guard in there that can really play and don't have it be Raymond Felton next year, because he's going to be available and he is terrible. So they got to be smart there.
One more real quick, like, you know, we talked about Dwight Howard going to the Rockets. Do big people even matter in the NBA anymore? Like, are we is the NBA kind of gone the way of college? Is it primarily guard driven? You know, I've heard the Suns were talking about making a trade for Paul Gasol. I hope they don't. Are we in an age where, you know, having a good big guy just doesn't mean as much as having a good big guy did 10 years ago when Shaq was in his prime, and, you know, even 20 years ago when he was battling with, you know, David Robinson and Patrick was still good, and Akeem was great. Are we just done with the day of the big guy in the NBA?
I'm going to say, right, I mean, today we are. We can't really argue that, but I'm going to say it's a phase. I just think if you get a couple big guys that come in that are dominant, I mean, we'll be right back. But I think Dirk Nowitzki has changed the game for better or for worse. I think seeing somebody that was over 7 feet tall and be able to get outside like that, and, you know, he won an MVP and a championship, and I think a lot of people seen that, and I think that's just a popular style of play now. And, you know, and you can even go back to Hakeem and Patrick and David Robinson. Those guys were able to shoot it a little bit, maybe more so than guys that came before them.
Right.
And, you know, so I think, you know, to be a center, I think you're going to have to be able to shoot it a little bit. But, I mean, you hear the talk for the first pick in the draft, and you hear this guy from Kansas – Joel Embiid. Hopefully I'm saying that right. You know, I think NBA GMs and just, you know, basketball fans in general know that a good big man can change your franchise around real quick. So I just think there's a lack of them. I don't think that we're necessarily seeing a change that's going to be forever. You know, it's hard to find seven-footers that can run and move like that and be dominant. So, but it's, to kind of get to your greater point, I think it takes a good guard to get them the ball, regardless of how skilled they are. But I don't think it's – is the NBA going the way of the guard? I don't think so. I think the big men – I mean, look at how big Kevin Durant is. He's – you know, I don't know if they measured his height lately, but he's close to 7 feet tall.
No, I think you're right. I think that at some point, you know, maybe you could credit Dirk or whatever. At some point, bigger guys just decided maybe it's more fun to be outside shooting the basketball, handling the ball. You know, like you're right. Like for as great as Akeem was, you know, Kenny Smith used to get the ball in the post, and then like no one could guard him in the post. And, you know, Akeem had a little handle, but for the most part, you know, back to the basket or face up, somebody had to get him in the right spot. So you're right. I think, you know, a guy like KD or Dirk, you know, they could go post, but if, you know, if it comes time to it, they can get their own shot. And I think, you know, let's face it, for two guys, you know, who played some rec league and a little high school basketball, that's just a funner way to play basketball if you got the ball in your hand. So I get it. I understand why it's gone that way. I just, you know, there was something to be said. I kind of miss seeing those big battles in the post between, like, the year Hakeem and Patrick were in the finals against each other. That was some good basketball to watch. Because for the most part, if you don't have that, half-court basketball becomes pretty boring. So
Well, I just think you got to get a couple in the league at the same time then because, you know, Shaq, watching Shaq wasn't fun. I mean, he was almost too dominant.
I enjoyed watching Shaq, but you're right. There was a point where in the league, after the other big guys that kind of left, I don't know if you remember, maybe you're too young, but earlier in Shaq's career, he flat out couldn't guard Hakeem Olajuwon, but, I mean, most people couldn't. And so you're right, as the Hakeem's left and Patrick left and those guys left, you're right, there was a point where you didn't even – Shaq was so dominant, you didn't even know how to officiate Shaq. Because, you know, no one could – you know, one bump, you can't call that every time. It was always get the ball, one bump, then he would dunk on you. You couldn't even officiate that. So you're right, but – I do think it doesn't matter if you have a couple at the same time. So hopefully we'll get that, and maybe we won't. Maybe this is the basketball we're going to see. But you're right. The NBA, like everything else, goes in phases, and maybe, you know, the day of the big guy will come back. I just figured out who that was trying to call in, and it wasn't Terrell Brown. I'll let you know who it is. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll let you know who it is after the break. Stay tuned. We're going to get into a little college basketball, and by that time it should be time for our weekly rants, and we'll get into that. So stay tuned on All Things Sports.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now, hopefully, my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning, students.
and welcome to Career Day. I hope you're excited to hear about all the great things you can do when you grow up.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily. I'm super excited to introduce my dad because he's my hero. When I was little, my dad was away a lot. But I was okay with that because he was doing this really important work driving ambulances in Iraq. Now he's at home, which is great for me because I get to see him every day now. And he's still the biggest hero I know because he tells all the ambulances and the fire engines where to go and rescue people when there's an emergency. I'm so proud of him. He's awesome. He's my dad.
If your service-connected disability prevents you from continuing in your civilian career, Voc Rehab offers counseling, training with a living allowance, education, and other services to help prepare you for your next mission.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, a little Red Hot Chili Peppers for you. They were at the Super Bowl, too. Like we said, if you saw it, Bruno Mars, and they killed it. I thought the Red Hot Chili Peppers were good as well. It's probably the highlight of the game, actually, was the halftime show, because by that point the game was over. But moving on, we're going to talk a little college basketball. Syracuse is the new number one this week. U of A dropped down to number three. Had a huge injury. I think the kid's name is Brandon Ashley. They lost probably the best, well, not probably. The games I've seen, he's the best post player. That's going to be a really hard one to fill. They got a game tomorrow against Oregon. This should be pretty good, pretty big game. And last night we saw Syracuse survive against Notre Dame. Have you been watching much college basketball? And from what you've seen, what do you think?
Well, I'll say this. I haven't been watching a ton, but I'm ready to get into it now that the NFL is over. Syracuse deservedly number one. I don't know if you've seen them against Duke on Saturday. Great game. That's a good basketball team. You got Wichita State up there, a Final Four team from last year that returned everybody undefeated. I don't know if they're a number one seed just because they haven't played anybody. I heard today they've only played one team in the top 25. I don't know if I can give a team that only played one team in the top 25 a number one seed when you have all these other teams that are in major conferences playing, you know, those games every week, sometimes two or three times a week. So, but yeah, I mean, long story short, I'm ready to get into it. I'm ready to dive in. I think, you know, right now, it's tough to call the best team with all these young guys and really no senior led teams. I think it makes it tough to call, and I think it makes March Madness exciting. So definitely, we'll be excited to get into it. I think, you know, I've seen Oklahoma play a few times. I know they're a little off the map. Lon Kruger's got a young team out there. For whatever reason, I've caught a lot of Big 12. I've seen Kansas play numerous times. Somehow they just get slotted into when I'm watching. So all kinds of talent on that team, but, you know, their win-loss record, they played a brutal schedule, so their win-loss record is not quite what some other teams are. But I don't know, as we get into these conference matchups, I think, you know, we'll kind of have some cream rise to the top. And I think Arizona, you know, you just mentioned, we get a lot of local access out here, and I think they really are in trouble. I mentioned earlier in the season, they really were only seven deep, and then to lose a starter like that, you're going to have somebody that wasn't playing major minutes play major minutes for you now. And I'm
right.
not saying, you know, there may be somebody on their bench that I've never heard of that comes in and really, you know, does his job, and then everyone else picks up their scoring. I mean, who knows? I can't predict that, but I think that's going to spell trouble for Arizona. I see them losing maybe three or four games down the stretch and kind of falling back to the pack a little bit. So we'll see. At this time last year, I don't think there were a lot of people that were touting Louisville, and that's, you know, they were dominant in the tournament, and that's who won. So I think it's right now is the time. If you're a college basketball fan, if you've already been watching, or if you're like me, you've been kind of focused on NFL, I think now is the time to get in and get heavy and you know, take your money to Vegas and get ready for March Madness.
Well, as you know, or maybe you don't know, Miller knows college basketball, this is where I make my money. This is where we're in Vegas. This is where Big Mike makes his money. I won't say I'm good at betting college basketball, but I'm good at betting college basketball. So
I hear a radio show challenge again because you're 0-1 in those.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with a college basketball.
You know, I can't let you talk like that on air. I mean, Mike's won a few bucks betting college basketball, but to call him a guru technician, I can't go there.
Yeah.
Every year is a new year, and I feel like this is my year. It's Miller time. It's Miller season, whatever you want to call it. But I think Mike is, you know, he's what we like to call in the business a has-been. So I'll tell you this, his knowledge is up there, but we'll see if his picks are up there.
All right. Anyway, I am quite the guru technician when it comes to college basketball, but we'll move on. We'll talk about the teams that we think that have a legitimate shot at being the number one seed, probably kind of early, but like you said, losing the starter on a team that was only seven deep is huge. Luckily, the Pac-10 is not hard to navigate through. If they could just get through the Pac-10, have a good showing in the Pac-12 now tournament, I think they have a good shot to still get the number one seed. Even though the ACC is tough, I think Syracuse, too much talent. That team.
Syracuse is getting the number one seed.
Yeah, that team's probably a lock already for a number one seed. I think the other two up for grabs. Cincinnati's playing good. I like them.
You got Florida sitting at number three, 19-2.
I would say Florida's good.
How about can San Diego State get some love?
I'll say this. Steve Fisher might be, I don't know what he does or what he's talking about or what he's telling kids, but Steve Fisher might be the best recruiter in college basketball. You know, he's the one who recruited the Fab Five, as we know, back in the Michigan days, and how he keeps, you know, San Diego State was basically, they weren't even on the map until he got there. Now he keeps getting quality kids to go there. So, no, I'll give San Diego State a little love. I think that, like you said, college basketball is kind of, you know, once we get into it, once we move towards the brackets and everything, the cream rises to the top for the most part. I think that any team can win on any given night. Especially like, I will say this, and I've always thought this, and I thought this the year that was it Bradley? Butler. The year Butler went all the way. College basketball, if you got good guards, you go a long way. Like big people don't matter. I shouldn't say don't matter, but good guards can take you a long way. And if you watch the tournament, almost every team in the tournament, even teams you haven't heard of, even small schools, the reason they're there is they have one good guard. And it's all guard play. And, you know, like I said, the teams I've talked about are already being good. They have good guard play, and that's what's going to take you a long way in college basketball.
So, and as far as I wanted to mention what you were talking about, number one seeds, I got to say, I know how college basketball works and the way they do the seeding. they're not gonna give Wichita State a number one. It's just how it works.
Right.
So I don't think you rank Kansas off from the number one seed, honestly. I know they've got five losses, but I just think, you know, I know the selection committee is going to see how much talent they have there, and I wouldn't write them off for a number one seed. So I really do think Arizona is going to drop. You know, that's kind of a prediction I'll make, so we'll see how that turns out. But I see Kansas maybe getting in there.
Real quick, let me ask you, since you said you've seen a lot of Kansas, I've seen two or three Kansas games, not a lot. Is Andrew Wiggins good? Is he unmotivated? Like, what's – every time I see him, he looks like that guy who's scoring points because he's good, but not because he's trying. Like, am I missing something on Andrew Wiggins?
Yeah, I think he is good. I think he's going to be successful at the NBA level. He's not – sometimes it's hard to rate these guys in college. He's not playing well. He's not playing – you bring all these new guys together. You got to – basketball is a team game at some level, and you got to be able to play as a team. And you're right, he's just – I'll be honest, you know, just a lot of times I can't find him.
Right.
I'm thinking, where is he on the court? Is he in right now? Or he doesn't stand out, and maybe he was a little overhyped. I think that's definitely fair to say. He may have lost – not necessarily lost money, but he may not be picked as high as, you know – kind of coming into the season, people said he was a lock to be the first overall pick, and I think, you know, he's obviously lost that luster with the way that he's played, but I still see he can run, jump, shoot, play defense. I mean, he has everything he needs. He's just not jumping off the page maybe like he was hyped to do. So, yeah, I still see NBA success for him, and I think, you know, if he is who they said he is, he should jump off. He should kind of jump off the screen come March.
All right, if you, you're an NBA GM, you won the lottery, you have the number one pick, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle, Andrew Wiggins, right now, who would you take?
I'm taking Embiid first. But if I'm sitting at two and I'm picking between those guys, it's tough.
Taking the big guy first?
Yeah, I'm taking – he's good, man. He's raw as all he's raw as can be, but he's
raw.
Yeah, but he can do the things that I just mentioned. He can run. His hands are good. I think he would actually benefit. I don't know if he will or not. He's talked about coming back. He would benefit by coming back. I think he's the number one pick this year, and I think he's the number one pick next year. So it just depends how he wants to play it. But if I'm picking at number two, just to answer your question, if I'm picking at number two, I'll go ahead and eliminate Julius Randle. I don't see him. How tall is he, 6'8"?
They say he's 6'9", but he's not 6'9".
Yeah, I can see him being a tweener at the next level. I don't want to compare him. I don't want to do him this disservice. But, you know, I see him kind of like an Ike Diagu or
wow.
You know, a Corliss Williamson type. A very skilled player, someone that's going to dominate at the college level. I don't know if you know this. Ike Diagu is an all-star in the D-League this year. I mean, if you see his average, Ike Diagu dominated at every level he's played at except the NBA. So, I was a pretty talented kid.
He had a lot of talent. He didn't seem to have a lot of want to, you know, but he doesn't have a lot of skill.
It's hard when you're when you carry a little bit of weight and you're 6'8", 6'9", in the league and you don't really jump out of the gym. It's hard to play at that, you know, or you're not an outside player or a shooter. It's hard to play at that height. So, I'm eliminating Julius Randle. I think Jabari Parker, he's in the same boat as far as height and things, but he's got a lot more skill than me. I mean, he looks, you know, and a better comparison for Randle and maybe Larry Johnson type, and he would have to develop a better shot to be even compared to Larry Johnson.
Right.
Jabari Parker's nice, but I'll be honest with you, man, if I'm picking between those three, I'm taking Wiggins.
All right. I like Parker just a little bit better than Wiggins. I'm with you on Randle. I think Randle's good. I just don't know where I would play him. Like, I can't see him guarding NBA power forwards, and I can't see him guarding NBA small forwards. So defensively, I don't know where I would play him.
He looks a lot like my guy from last year, number one pick, Anthony Bennett.
Real quick, I was actually going to bring up Bennett in this conversation. They were saying, and Diagu might fall in this category, a lot of problems with these guys is every level they've been on, they're used to playing minutes. they said a lot of, like a guy like Bennett, they haven't done it yet, and they probably should. Like, a guy like that should go, he should be in the D League where he can get minutes. Like, guys like that need minutes.
Did you see him drop 15 the other night?
I did see that. But
I'm struggling with Bennett, man, because I thought Bennett would do a lot more. I watch him at UNLV. I'm a UNLV Hoops fan, so I try to catch as much UNLV as I can, even though I don't have CBS Sports Network this year. I mean, DirecTV, I can't get that on regular sports channels. I mean, come on. But I'm disappointed in Bennett because Bennett, he was a baller last year, and really he's trying to shoot outside too much. I don't know. I guess that's what I'm saying with Randall. He's going to fall into that.
That was kind of the point with Bennett. They were saying that when he's gotten minutes, and, you know, no one would ever confuse Mike Brown with Coach of the Year, but when he's gotten minutes, he's been successful. The problem is that, like, you know, he might get 15, 20 minutes here, and then the next game he'll get 4 or 5. Like, he needs consistent minutes. And I don't care what anybody says. Basketball especially, I think football you could probably improve through practice. Basketball, I think you only get better by playing.
I agree, but you can't – I mean, I guess that's what we're debating. Can you send the number one pick to the D League? I can't.
Why can't you?
Just because he would benefit from it?
I
think you're admitting failure already, though. I mean, if you're the guy that sat in the draft room and said draft him, you almost have to lose your job. If you're sending him to the D League, you didn't draft him to go to the D League.
I mean, I'm not saying, well, after a while, what's better for the player? No, at some point you have to ask, like, he's not helping your team now. He's not selling tickets. What's better for the player? As of right now, the better thing for the player is the D-League. Would you agree or disagree?
I would reluctantly agree.
Yeah, so if the better thing for the player is the D-League, does it really matter where he's drafted? Like, if that's the only way he's going to get better, I think that's what you got to do. And then you're right. You might be admitting on some level you made a bad draft choice because ideally you want the number one pick to help you right away. But if you're Cleveland, you're not winning anything major this year anyway, so why not send him to the D-League, let him get some minutes? He'll come back next year, he'll be a better player, and maybe he can help you. But I've heard some things about Cleveland today that shocked me about Mike Brown and that team. So maybe it's that environment that's bad.
Something's wrong there because they bring in Luol Deng and don't get one bit better. There's definitely something wrong there.
Well, allegedly or supposedly, Luol Deng said that that team has no accountability. Guys pop off all the time. Guys get kicked out of practice, and then come game time, they get the same minutes. So, I mean, how Mike Brown got another job anyway is beyond me, but hopefully if this gets out, I mean, I should say hopefully because I don't want anyone to lose their job, but if this gets out, you know, maybe Mike Brown maybe he's just not a good coach.
Yeah, I think I think that was kind of established already. And it's tough. I mean, what do you do if you're Mike? You kick somebody out of practice and then you just got to hold them accountable? I mean, is that where he's going wrong, or is he just – he doesn't have the credibility to begin with?
I think that, I think that if you are a hothead or you're a certain type of player, there are certain things that, you know, you would say to a Mike Brown that you might not say to I don't want to go all the way as high as Phil Jackson, but, you know, there's certain things you're saying to a Mike Brown that you might not be saying to other coaches. Like, you might, you know, say F you to Mike Brown and walk out, you know.
That's true, yeah. I guess, you got to do that.
So I think that, if you walk out of practice, you know, and, you know, if you're popping off, like, you have to hold them accountable. And, you know,
I got to imagine Allen Iverson said F you to Larry Brown and still played, though.
I think
who's mouthing off? Is it Kyrie Irving?
I heard it was Deion Waiters.
Okay.
You can bench Deion Waiters.
You can probably bench Deion Waiters.
You can bench Deion Waiters.
Where'd Deion Waiters go to college?
Syracuse.
Oh yeah. Okay. I was trying to think of that the other day. Forgot to Google it.
But no, I think for the most part, I don't want to get into, you know, like we kind of switched topics, I guess, from college. But for the most part, you know, I think. You know, people are talking all this stuff about maybe LeBron will go back or whatever. If Mike Brown's there, he's not going back. So rehiring him, I think, was a mistake on a lot of levels. But if there's a, like, if you were trying to present a situation that LeBron would go back to, I think Cleveland has done everything to screw it up. But it doesn't matter because LeBron's not going back anyway.
No, he's not. Well, back to college, I think, just for the people out there that's listening that's looking for,
We got about 11 minutes. I realize just now I haven't said the number all show. It's 718-766-4553. I didn't say the number because I thought we would have an interview. Our interview was canceled, so we have a little more time. We have about, if you got anything you want to get into that we've talked about on the show or anything we haven't talked about on the show, give us a call, 718-766-4553. I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, yeah, and please, if you're out there listening, call in. If you got college basketball sleepers, I really want to hear them because I need them for my annual trip to Vegas. But what I was going to say is I think as I read you the top six, it goes Syracuse, Arizona, Florida, Wichita State, San Diego State, Villanova. I was just going to say, I think if you look at the teams, maybe 8 through 14, and then on down as I kind of look at the top 25, I think the bulk of who we're going to see at the end of March in the Elite Eight, Final Four type times has a lot of teams that are down the line. Like I said, I don't see Arizona. Wichita State's two. They're two on the map. Depending on what kind of bracket they get, they've got a nice team, so I don't want to write them off yet. San Diego State overrated, Villanova overrated. But as I read, you got Kansas at 8, Michigan State at 9. Michigan at 10, Duke at 11, Creighton at 12, Louis at 13, and Louisville, who I definitely can't write Louisville off. Louisville's going to be there late. I don't know how they're ranked 14th when some of these other teams have got more losses. They're ranked 4 and 5 spots ahead of them.
They've had a few. That guy Bohannon got kicked off the team. They've had a few. I think Blackshear has got a concussion problem. They've had a few injuries and team problems, so I think that's why they're low.
I understand, but I think they're going to have that all wrapped up in
I think they'll have it wrapped up, and, you know, they got, if not the best, one of the best big game coaches in the game in Rick Pitino.
And then you heard it here first. I think Oklahoma's going to do some damage. They're actually nicer than people realize. So, not that I've been in Vegas, but Oklahoma has been underdogs in so many games, and, you know, I bet with the buddy and stuff, and I've been killing with Oklahoma because they're getting 6 and 7 points every week, and they're winning a lot of those games. So I'm gonna ride that bandwagon as well.
I like Ron Kruger, and real quick, for my boy out there, if you're listening, there's your Oklahoma mention. So I got a buddy. I promise I get Oklahoma in the show some kind of way. I didn't even have to do it. My boy did it for me. So there's your Oklahoma mention.
Yeah, he didn't even put me up to that. I'm already on to him.
So I think that. The beauty of March Madness and the beauty, especially this year, I would say any of the teams you mentioned are potential Final Four teams. If Michigan State is healthy going into the Final Four, they're the only team, not only do they have good young guys, but they got some senior leadership too. That team's got a real shot. I really like watching them play. And even though I how I feel about Duke, they're another team. They don't have any really good inside play, but, you know, if they get hot and their shooters are knocking out shots come tournament time, they can go on a run. I agree with you. I think if Arizona gets a 1 seed, I think they can make it to the Sweet 16. But with the loss of Ashley, I think that, I could see them, if they're a 4 or 5 seed, I could see them going out in the first round, definitely in the second round. So hopefully they'll, you know, like I said, definitely they'll beat up on kind of a weak Pac-12, but I think they're on their way down. I think Syracuse is on their way up. And so we got about 7 minutes of show left.
Iowa State.
Didn't they lose like 5 in a row?
Who?
Ohio State.
Iowa State.
All right, I'm sorry. I thought you said Ohio State.
No, Ohio State.
Don't give me Ohio State. I like Iowa State. I like the mayor. I like him as a player, and I definitely like him as a coach. So
you didn't like him as a player.
Fred Hoiberg, how did I not like him as a player?
Who did he play for in the NBA?
He played for Chicago, actually.
Yeah, when you had Marcus Fizer, too?
Yeah, and we were bad. But, I mean,
how can you say you're not
him?
An NBA fan?
Huh?
How can you say you're not an NBA fan with stats like that?
I probably watch more NBA than I lead on, but, you know, anyway. We had about 6 minutes of show left. We're going to do our weekly rants next week. We'll get back into we didn't do this or that this weekend. Next week, we'll get back into this or that. Some weeks we'll be picking, we'll choose a category and pick our weekly top five. You can call us and give us your top five in certain categories as well. So without further ado, Chris Miller, weekly rant, what do you got?
Man, you're putting me on the spot with the rant, huh?
Oh, I thought you were ready.
I've been ranting all show. I feel like I've already kind of, you know, I've already done my rant. But I don't know. A lot of the stuff I wanted to rant on, we kind of talked about. I was kind of going to rant on Andrew Bynum. We touched on that. I feel like ranting on you for saying you like Freddie Hoiberg's game.
He was a shooter. I mean, I didn't say I liked his game. I said I liked him as a player. He's one of those guys who, you know, we could say this about every, I don't want to make it racial, but like they call that the white guy award, like, you know, the guy who gets the most out of his ability. He's one of those guys. I liked him.
I'm going to go ahead and rant on why I think Seattle will not win next year. And the reason I say that is because the Cincinnati Bengals are going to win the Super Bowl next year.
Oh, now, my God.
Now,
not this again.
I know this sounds crazy.
Not this again.
But I was a year early on my Cincinnati Bengals prediction. I think they're coming back. Andy Dalton got a lot to prove. He got rid of Jay Gruden, which I think is going to make him even that much more successful. Geno Atkins comes back off injury. They get better through the draft. Mike Brown continues his masterful picking that he's been doing the last few years. head coach, what? Give me his name.
Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis. He's got so much to prove.
You don't even know the coach's name.
They're going to come out next year. Leon Hall is back. I think they have the horses to make a run. I think the AFC is wide open. I think the blueprint has been laid to beat the Denver Broncos. I think Tom Brady's he's got one final run in him, but I don't think it's next year. I think they're 2 years away. They got to add some depth in some different areas. He probably needs to do a restructuring thing to get New England back in there. So, yeah, long story, rant short, Cincinnati Bengals 2015 Super Bowl champs. You heard it here first. Go out there. I think you can get it about 35-40 to 1. You know, lay a 10, a 20, a 100, whatever you think my advice is worth, and take Cincinnati to the bank.
All right. Now that we're done with that nonsense, my rant is going to be about when we talk about the greatest of all time. Everyone all week I heard Peyton Manning, greatest of all time. Peyton Manning, greatest of all time. Peyton, if he wins this week, greatest of all time. I challenge you to go out and find anyone, any quarterback especially, who in the Super Bowl that we've talked about potentially being the greatest of all time, lay an egg the way he did. Like, you can blame it on his receivers. You can blame it on his line. You can blame it on wherever you want to. But if you watch the replays, he got a little scared in the pocket. He got happy feet. There's a lot of times where he's throwing, like falling back. He's got his eyes closed. They rattled him. The greatest of all time doesn't get rattled. I'll tell you this right now. There's no way to find out if I'm wrong or right, but I will put my life on this. Tom Brady doesn't look that bad in that game as Peyton Manning did. No way, no how.
He looked almost as bad against a Giants defense that wasn't as good. 2007.
They almost won that game. They still almost pulled that game out.
Yeah, but he had to throw a touchdown in the fourth quarter to get to 14, and they still lost. I mean, he got shut out the whole game just like Peyton did.
He got to 17, and you're right. We'll argue that another day. But
no, they didn't get to 17. They lost 17-14.
You're right. My bad. Anyway, the point I'm making is, since we got our Peyton Manning apologist in the building, the point I'm making is, in big games, he crumbles. We've seen it before. We've seen it again. Like we said, the one Super Bowl he did win, he won it against the worst quarterback to ever play in the Super Bowl, Rex Grossman, handed him a Super Bowl win. I don't want to hear greatest of all time ever again. Joe Cool, you still got the spot. John Elway, you still got number two. And for my money, if we're not putting rings in it, heck, let's make Dan Marino number three. That's all I got to say. Chris Miller, I don't care what your opinion on Peyton Manning is. You and Peyton, you go ahead and vacation together and have a good time. That's our show.
I don't think anyone hates Peyton worse than you, but, you know, if someone does, it's me. I'm just saying I think what it does, you kind of mentioned it in there, what this does is really solidifies Joe Cool as the GOAT, the greatest of all time. I've had a coming around on that. He won every big game he was in, except when he played for the Chiefs, and he's the greatest of all time. So let me end your rant for you.
All right. And he got a pretty bad Chiefs team for the second round of the playoffs. So, but anyway, all right, that's our show. Like I say, we'll have this or that. Will be back next week. We'll be back next week. We got the webpage up. We're trying to get the group up. Give us your questions. Give us your ideas. If you got ideas for the show, we'll love to hear them. And give us a call sometime. We'd love to hear from you. So. This is it from All Things Sport. We apologize for the technical difficulties at the start. And have a good week.
Palmer.